This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, I'm Chua Entik, and this is Live and Learn. Palestinian Presidents' Day is observed annually on April 17. This year, more than 1,000 Palestinians held in Israeli prisons began a mass hunger strike to press for basic rights and shed light on the deplorable prison conditions, conditions which child prisoners are not spared from either. With me to shed light on this issue is Noma Hashim, who is the editor of a new collection called Dreaming of Freedom, Palestinian Child Prisoners Speak. Noma, thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to be able to speak about this issue.
This prison issue is very central to the Palestinian struggle. And before we go into the book, can you give us some context why this is such a vexed issue?
Well, the thing is, Israel uses imprisonment as a way to break down the resistance to the occupation since 1967. 850,000 Palestinians have been arrested. And since that means that every family has been affected by the issue of prison. And lately also, many children have been arrested. I mean, there have been about 2,000 children imprisoned since the year 2000. And so children are now suffering from the occupation. I mean, they've been living under military occupation since 1967.
There's no due process?
Palestinian children have been living under military occupation, and the whole process of arrest and imprisonment is under a military system. So when they're arrested by soldiers. There's no due process because although under the UN Convention on Child Rights, they're supposed to be accompanied by a parent during interrogation or by a lawyer. They're not supposed to be shackled and they're not supposed to be put under solitary confinement. But these things are all ignored. And children as young as 11, 12 are arrested and put in solitary confinement. And then they can be imprisoned for 3 months or a few months before they're actually brought to the court. And then usually by that time, they will confess to anything because they want to be freed. Because children, can you imagine, they're not able to withstand this kind of pressures usually.
It's almost taken for granted that everyone knows about this conflict. But what was your introduction to this Palestinian-Israeli conflict or the Israeli occupation in
Palestine? I've been involved
in
being an activist for Palestine since the year 2009, since the attacks on Gaza 2008 and 2009, where I was asked to join Viva Palestina Malaysia, actually just as the treasurer because they needed someone to manage the books and the funds, and I'm an accountant. However, getting involved on a day-to-day basis because, you know, when you send funds over, there's a lot of accountability and checking and audit. So basically, I ended up speaking with somebody in Gaza or in Palestine every day, which I still do. I still speak to someone every day about this. And the thing is, when you get so involved with them, you speak to them, they become your friends. And in 2012, somebody called Dr. Mahmoud, who was chairman of CPDS, the Center for Political and Development Studies, he asked whether I could help to start a library in Gaza, and I decided to fund it with my family. It's called the Hashim Sani Library, after my father's name. And as a result of this, one day he asked whether I could publish this interviews that were done with prisoners who had been released in 2011 under an exchange with one soldier called Gilad Shalit. There was 1,027 Palestinians prisoners who had been released. And so they were interviewed by some journalists and they came out with their stories and they asked whether I could publish it because they wanted people to know about what was happening. In fact, before 2012, I had no idea about this prison issue because outside, it doesn't affect us. We're just not aware of this. And yet, you know, 850,000 Palestinians have been arrested since 1967. It affects every Palestinian. It's something that we don't see and we don't get affected by outside. So when I read the stories, I was really quite affected by it. And I could see them as more than, you know, just statistics. They're not numbers. When you read them, you see them, their stories, and then you start to identify with them and empathize with them. And that's how I got involved and I decided to publish the stories. And this led to the book called The Prisoner's Diaries, which I edited. And it's quite amazing since it was published in 2013. It has been quite well received throughout the world. In fact, it's now in 6 languages, and the 7th language, which is Persian, has just been, we've just completed the translation, and it will be published soon, inshallah. So it's been really well received. What happened was, once I released the book in English in 2013, activists around the world, when they heard about it, they just picked it up and they translated it by themselves, pro bono. People who are professional translators were actually doing this. That's how I got the French version out, and the Turkish, and then we have now the Arabic, of course, and Indonesian, Malay, and now the Persian version.
Did any progress come from that in terms of improving the rights or the conditions in, within those Israeli prison?
Well, I think there's now so much more awareness from the time I started looking at this issue. Now, with the hunger strike that just started on the 17th of April, with 1,500 prisoners led by Marwan al-Barghouti, who's the leader of the prisoners, and that has now received worldwide coverage. People are so much more aware of the issue of prisoners. And actually, the reason why prison is used, well, what's in prison is these are not normal prisoners, they are political prisoners. Israel puts in the leadership of the Palestinians in prison. This is to suppress resistance. Palestine's best intellectuals and thinkers are in prison. People like Marwan al-Barghouti, who actually was working on a document to reconcile Palestinian groups for peace and unity. And in fact, he was even nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, and yet he's put in prison. So this is the way that Israel tries to break up the Palestinians and not have any unity, so that there won't be any resistance to the occupation. Recently, of course, more people are becoming aware, especially of child prisoners. And up to 500 to 700 children are arrested every year. In fact, since the latest uprising, we call it the Al-Quds Intifada, which started in October 2015, there's been about 2,000 children have been arrested already since that time.
And often, what are the reasons they were arrested for?
They're arrested for stone throwing, and sometimes for, they say, carrying knives or attempted stabbings. What happens is that when the children are arrested and they're brought to prison, they're usually interrogated in a violent manner by themselves. As you know, they don't have access to counsel. Their parents are not present. And a child who's 12 or 13 or 15, anyone under 18 is considered a child, when they're subjected to this kind of treatment, and then they are given something to sign and confess. And usually, because they have endured it for so long, they will usually sign it in order to get out. In fact, the boys, the children try to be very brave about it. I read you one of the stories, in fact. The story of Saleh Rodwan. He, in fact, 14 years old, from Kalkilia. When he was in prison, he was denied medical attention, and he had been receiving treatment for his eyes, and he actually became blind because he was denied treatment. When he was talking about his story, he tried to be brave about it, and he said that when I was sentenced to 2 years in prison, which I served in Megiddo prison, imprisonment was not my first concern, because prisons are for men. So he tries to be brave about this. But at the end of it, he shows he's still a child, because he said that when he was in prison, he said, "I was alone struggling with my illness. I was writing imaginary letters of anger. I wish the pain could go away without medication," because he did not get medication. "I wish I could beat the jailer." And in the end, he says, "I wish so much to lie on my mother's lap so that she could wipe away my sadness with her love and place a kiss on my forehead." So, you know, it shows you he's still a child, even though he tries to be brave.
There was something written by Richard Falk, who is an international law expert from Princeton, who wrote the foreword to this book. And he said that some of these child prisoners prefer the confines of a prison to being placed under house arrest upon release.
Yeah, you can see that, yeah, from the stories. And he was quite puzzled about it. He wrote back to me about it and asked me why. And the thing is, the house becomes a prison for them. When they're in prison, they're away from everybody, and it's bad, of course. But When they place under house arrest, they go home, but it's not like home anymore. They're forced to stay in the house and they can't go out except to go to school. So the house becomes a prison, a place that used to be their refuge, now becomes a place of suffering for them. Then their parents become their jailers because the Israelis make the parents responsible for the child to make sure that he doesn't leave the house. So they have to accompany him to school and accompany him back. Along the way, he can't stop. You know, these are teenagers, these are boys, and they can't go out to play, you know, they can't hang out with their friends. So they start to resent their own parents for forcing them to go home. So they're sitting at home, looking out the window, seeing their friends pass by, and it becomes even more painful for them. And
Is it strictly through the parents, or are there any device attached to them to track the movements of these kids?
Actually, I'm not sure, but they are monitored because, you know, it's still a military occupation and they are watched. And what happens is that it makes them really miserable. And also sometimes when they say house arrest, they say that if the boy is from Jerusalem, they say, oh, you can't go back to that same area. You can come out from prison, you have to live elsewhere. So they go and stay with their grandparents, for instance. So they are still cut off from normal life. And a lot of these kids, actually, if you read the story, they actually like going to school. They miss going to school. They miss the normal everyday things. They miss the school bell ringing. One of them mentioned that. So putting them in prison, separating from all this, and not giving them access to education, especially those who are in prison for a few months or years, you know, it just like destroys their whole future as well. Many of the boys, when we followed up the stories with updates, we got the journalists to go back and find out about the boys. And many of them had stopped school because after a few months in prison, they go back and they can't catch up. Or their friends in their cohort have already moved on. It makes them very resentful, or it makes it very frustrating when they're not able to catch up, or they're put in a lower class. And then sometimes they are rearrested. So it's very disruptive to their studies. So it ends up that a lot of the prisoners give up, they drop out of school, and they become unemployed. So you can imagine that you have all these youth who are very frustrated and have a lot of time on their hands. So you can see in a way also that this leads to a lot of unrest. And maybe that's part of the reason for the uprising, the Intifada that started in October 2015.
My guest today is Norma Hashim, the editor of Dreaming of Freedom. We'll talk more about the book after this short break. You're listening to BFM 89.9. You're listening to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Antek. My guest today is Norma Hashim, the editor of a new collection called Dreaming of Freedom, Palestinian Child Prisoners Speak. Norma, when did you start working on this book?
After we saw that the first book, Prisoners' Diary, was so well received throughout the world, and actually there was so much interest. And we also realized then that this approach to publishing about the prisoners was actually good because it was something that was very accessible to a normal person. You read the stories from a personal point of view in their own words, you actually really get it. And you feel like they're also human, they're not just numbers. And you understand a bit that their feelings, and they're just like normal human beings, fathers and sons and husbands, wives, you know. So during the time after early 2015, and I'd been reading a lot about children being put in prison and being tortured and very young children being arrested. And so I started thinking about doing a second book to highlight this issue, because the issues of child prisoners is really bad. When you think about children, I have sons as well, and to think of boys that age who are denied their freedom, but they're also shot and killed. In fact, since the Al-Quds Intifada started in 2015, there's been about 60 children have been shot. It's almost one a week, one child killed every week. And it's something that I felt, something that we had to cover. We had to raise awareness of it. And in the West now, there are many people now more aware of these things. In fact, there are demonstrations regularly in front of companies which are complicit in the occupation, like G4S. People are more aware of that, but still it's not enough. So all these violations of child rights should be highlighted, especially to people in the West, because it's their governments that uphold this occupation. Without US military aid, there would be no siege of Gaza. there would be no occupation, really, because, you know, this supports the all the things that they do. So American voters, Western voters, they should be aware of what their governments are funding. You know, if they're so concerned about democracy, they should realize that there's a military occupation that they're funding in Israel.
You were telling me how the first book that you worked on, The Prisoner's Diaries, were very well received. But I suspect a book like this, for people to want to go out and get it and to make the effort to read it, they're probably already sympathetic to the cause. So how do you reach across to people from the other side who don't necessarily agree with your views?
We have to go mainstream now. And I do notice that the issue of prisoners have gone mainstream. In fact, an op-ed by Marwan Balghouti, as I mentioned, the leader of the prisoners' strike, was recently published in the New York Times, which was a first, I think. And maybe many people in America would have been upset about the fact that they had given a voice. But it was very important that they allowed him to speak and give the reasons why they were going on strike. In fact, the Palestinians are going on strike because they have demands for equitable medical access to medical treatment, family visits, in fact, which have been denied. They want access to phones so they can call their families. And then they also have, they want to put an end to administrative detention, which is where Palestinians are arrested and held without charge or trial. So all this is part of the demands of the prisoners, and this is why they're going on hunger strike. They started with 1,500 prisoners, and it's going to be, I've heard that there are more and more people are going to join them, more and more prisoners, because they can elect to join the hunger strike and more people are going to join.
This book is dedicated to the memory of Ayman Abbasi, a child prisoner who was interviewed but didn't live to see it published. Can you tell us a little bit about Ayman?
Yeah, Ayman Abbasi was imprisoned several times. The first time was when he was in the ninth grade, and he was later put under house arrest for 10 months, as he mentions in the book. And after he was put on house arrest, they asked him to go back to prison for 18 more months. And this is a typical case of a child prisoner. They go in and out of prison and it disrupts their education. In November 2015, which is around the time that the Intifada started, he was shot during a demonstration. Although his family said that there was no demonstration at the time and the demonstration only happened after he was shot. In fact, after they shot him and the body was brought to the hospital, the soldiers even tried to come and seize the body. This is the latest thing that they are trying to do now. Is not only did they kill you, they keep your body and to make your family suffer. So, you know, they tried to really break the will of the Palestinians. There's another case of a teenager called Abdul Hamid Abu Asrur. His body has been in the freezer for the last 1 year. They have still not released the body to his parents.
Why is that?
It's punishment. Even killing you is not enough punishment. They want to make your family suffer after you're dead. That's how bad it is.
So because there are so many child prisoners currently in Israeli prisons, how much material did you have to work with?
Well, when we decided, Yusuf Al-Jamal and I, Yusuf was the translator for my first book, and we became very good friends because we worked closely on the subsequent translations as well. And so when we decided that this was an issue, the issue of child prisoners was important enough that to warrant a second book, we approached Faiha Shalash, a journalist who had done some of the interviews in the first book. And she was in the West Bank. Yusuf, you know, was in Gaza at that time. And here I was in Malaysia. All of us could not meet each other. People in Gaza cannot go to the West Bank and vice versa. And I also cannot go to either of these places. But, you know, the internet breaks down all barriers. So we approached Faiha, and Faiha went to the Prisoners Club. The Prisoners Club is a support group established by the Palestinian Authority. So she went to the Prisoners Club and asked whether she could interview any children. So they gave her a list of names. And so she went to speak to them. And we asked for their permission and their parents' permission for their names and their photos to be published. And they were happy to do so. Because if you don't let the world know about your story, how would they know about this whole issue, right? So they're willing to do that. So from there, we got interviews done. And later, what happened with Faiha was that her husband was another journalist, and he was arrested under administrative detention. What happened is that even non-violent protests or people who write something which the government is Israeli government is not pleased with, they arrest you. So they put her husband, called Muhammad Al-Kik, under administrative detention without trial, without charge. And he went on hunger strike to protest. So subsequently, for the updates on the children, we had to get another person to find out what happened to the kids, because Faiha herself was embroiled in this hunger strike campaign, which subsequently led to his freedom after many, many days. We got so many people involved, and most of the people involved in the book are former detainees who have gone to prison.
Yeah, including the person who wrote the introduction to this book is a former detainee and a former Palestinian Minister of Prisoners Affairs, which is something, because in the West Bank, the Palestinian Authority are the ones who is in government, and then in Gaza, it's Hamas. Are the prisoners' issues viewed differently because of who is running the show in both territories?
No, not really. Well, because when they are in prison, that they do work together. That's why there's this hunger strike of 1,500 prisoners. It covers all parties, and that's what Marwan Barghouti is trying to do, is to unite all the factions, because only with unity can you achieve something for the Palestinians. Because, you know, the whole divide and rule thing. You know that the Israelis practice this apartheid system. Richard Falk had done a well-publicized report recently. It was commissioned by the United Nations. He'd done a study on laws and practices in Palestine, in the occupied territories, to show that there's a system of apartheid exists, where Israel divides up the Palestinians into different groups. You're either from Gaza, you're from Jerusalem, they got different IDs. And so by dividing them all up, treating them all differently, this kind of breaks up the people and breaks up the social fabric. Well, prisoners, they are united. I must say that I've noticed that they do work together. And in my book, we cover prisoners from all parties.
I ask us, politically, they don't always agree on the means to achieve the same. They might have the same goal, but they don't agree on the means on achieving it.
Yes. Obviously, I think the Palestinian Authority, the system is failing. It's not working. People in Gaza are really suffering now under the siege, more than ever now. But the world is distracted by Syria and other places. But yes, we have to keep an eye on the siege, because as it gets worse, this could lead to even more unrest.
This title, Dreaming of Freedom, can you tell me who came up with it? And is this something that you notice in all the accounts of these children? Are they all dreaming of freedom?
Yes. Yes. In fact, when I was thinking of the title, but when I was reading the book as well, the children's stories are different from the adult stories. The adult stories in the prisoners' diaries focus on them missing their family, their wives, their brothers, the children. I noticed with the children's stories, because they're children, they would all be talking of how they were dreaming of the time they would be free again, because they couldn't wait to get out from solitary confinement, from prison. Do you know, in solitary confinement, where they can be kept for up to 2 months, the cell is 1 meter by 2 meters. It's just the size of a mattress with an open toilet at the end. They are given food sometimes on the floor. You know, when the kids have to suffer through this, and then they are brought out for interrogation for hours, where they're beaten and they're stripped, strip searched. This is so, so harsh on kids, that all they want to do is to be free. The underlying theme you can see from the stories is they are always thinking of the time when they can go back home and lie on their own bed. And this boy, one of the boys who were arrested during Ramadan, was thinking that if only he was home, he'd be breaking fast, having juice and things like that, you know. I felt this was a title because this was what they were dreaming about. In fact, there's one story where the boy, he says that he had been dreaming about freedom when he was in prison, but when he was released and he was walking home and he passed a checkpoint, he realized the meaning of freedom was more than just coming out of jail. The meaning of freedom was that freedom would only come when it was free of checkpoints, of guards, of barbed wires. And then he realized that actually that was what freedom would mean, but he hadn't got it.
Yeah, about that, because every family knows someone or has a family member who has went through the prison system, and kids, especially those who are in prison, grow up feeling this sense of anger and resentment. Do you think this situation is conducive towards compromise or diplomacy for what many think is the only plausible resolution, which is a two-state solution?
Well, you see, there's no peace without justice. As long as this system of imprisoning people, oppressing them, destroying their homes, I mean, without all these things, how can you expect people to accept the system? So at the moment now, with all the illegal settlements being built on the land that was supposed to be part of the two-state solution, it becomes less and less likely that there will be one. And so I think that as long as America supports this Israeli state with billions of dollars, they're not going to want to change anything. Everything is in their favor at the moment, and they can now keep seizing the land and build more settlements, bring more people in to occupy these places. Hundreds and thousands of settlers, once they come in, how are you going to move them out? They've already built their homes there, and they're going to be so reluctant to leave, obviously. So it's going to be very difficult, and I suspect the Israeli government does not want any solution. They want to just go forward and seize all the land eventually, as you can see by the disappearing Palestine map. You know, you can see the four maps where less and less land is now allocated as Palestine, given as Palestine, yeah.
What's next going forward, do you think?
Well, I think now that the world is more aware of what's going on, we as activists, we have to do more. I'm very glad that there's a network of activists throughout the world. We all work together. As you can see, even from my book, getting Richard Falk to write the foreword. And we also have the person who drew the cover was a Syrian refugee as well from Yarmouk. Who's living in Sydney. Many, many people were involved in the book. The editor, someone who did the edited the text for me, James Godfrey, is an activist in England, also who works with the Break the Siege organization. So there's a lot of cooperation between people around the world for this cause, which is very good to see. People from all countries, from all backgrounds and races and religions. I think the thing to move forward is that we have to put this issue out on the mainstream media, and we have to speak out more about this and raise more awareness. And eventually, once we convince the electorate of the Western countries that provides the funding, this is when change will come. I just wanted to read a poem that I saw on a blog by a Palestinian Christian. And it's called We Shall Remain by Taufik Zayat. He was the mayor of Nazareth a long time ago, and this was written in 1970. And he wrote, I just read a portion of the poem to let you know this is what the Palestinians feel. And he says, "It is 1,000 times easier for you to pass an elephant through the needle's eye, to catch fried fish in the Milky Way, to plow the sea, to teach the alligator speech, 1,000 times easier than smothering with your oppression the spark of an idea or forcing us to deviate a single step from our chosen march. Like 20 impossibles, we shall remain in Lida, Ramla and Galilee."
That's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you, Norma.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Dreaming of Freedom, Palestinian Child Prisoners Speak is now available in bookstores.
And online.
You've been listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.